Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
We have another guest that we're going to jump to right away.
Yes.
We chatted briefly about this guy's story last week when we heard word that this book was coming out. It's called The Secret Apartment, Vet Stadium, a surreal memoir. It's available on Amazon at the Barnes & Noble Rittenhouse Square. You can get it at Urban Jungle in South Philly. But this gentleman lived at Veterans Stadium inside.
Yeah.
1979 to 1981. There's all kinds of stories about parties with the players' wives and stuff like that. And just, I got to know how he got away with it all this time.
And whether or not he signed a movie deal on this.
Yes.
Because this story has to be told.
All right. Please welcome Philadelphia's own Tom Garvey. Yay! Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing great, man. Hey, this story is wild. And so you've been sitting on this for a long time because that was back in the late 70s, early 80s, and you just recently decided to put pen to paper and get this out to the masses?
Yes. I was working on another book, Many Buku Magics, about Vietnam and living with the mountain people, the Montagnards.
Okay.
And that took me 47 years. And then when the pandemic started, I started putting things on Facebook, short stories to friends, just to cheer them up because we didn't know what we were getting involved in and everybody was locked down. And it turned into a book. I didn't mean to write a book, but it turned into a book.
Oh, that's
first off, you were special forces in Vietnam, is that correct?
Yeah, in the Army I was an airborne ranger in special forces.
All right,
and,
so that story alone is enough. I mean, and then you go on to this thing.
Yeah, but that's the one that doesn't make it, everybody stand up and pay attention. It's the vet thing that's crazy.
And that's but it's such a mind boggler. So basically, and obviously you have the book coming out. There was an article in the Inquirer, and they did the vetting. They talked to a couple of people, you know, because obviously the vet's been destroyed, and you swore that nobody was allowed to take pictures or get the word out because that was your home for a couple of years. So
I was afraid of that. I was really afraid of pictures.
Right. So, but you have a number of people who are validating it, and the Inquirer said they did the checking and the vetting, and it all seems to be true. So explain. You just had a couple of sequences that fell into place that made you look at this unused concession stand and say, "I could live here." Explain what led to that.
I credit Mike McNally with this. I actually didn't think of it. I was storing furniture for one of the Philadelphia Eagles, who didn't want to sign a lease just before they went to camp in Westchester one year. He was uncomfortable about a new coach that had been hired by Dick Vermeil, and he wasn't sure of his chance of making the team, no matter how well he did. He was right. We stored his furniture, and he did get cut, and he left town quickly, and he left everything behind. And, you know, when the Pope came to town, I was supposed to have a couple days off. There weren't many days that I had off in a year. But I was heading down the shore, and the city announced that for the Pope's visit, the Vet Stadium parking lots would be open at 4 o'clock in the morning. I had nobody to work; it wasn't scheduled. All the guys working in my parking lot were either high school kids, and they had school at that time, and also or the supervisors all had regular jobs. So at the last minute, they canceled school, but that was at the last minute. And I put together a skeleton crew from J.C. Dobbs, and I couldn't trust these guys. I loved them, but I couldn't trust them to show up at 4 o'clock in the morning with their clothes on. So I had a sleepover at the vet. It was Seamus' idea, the bouncer at Dobbs. And so it was really pretty cool, but I was also nervous about that. So we were sleeping in this storage area. And on some of the furniture in there, and Mike McNally said in the dark, he said, you know, if you just cleaned up this room and rearranged the stuff in here, this would be the coolest apartment in the world. And I thought, damn. So I did, and I never moved out. But yeah, that was from the 2nd of October, 1979, the night before the Pope came to town, to the last days of 1981.
Tom, that's great. What was your living situation at that time?
Well, I had been evicted from a house in Chester, an old Victorian house right off the campus at Widener, where I'd gone to school. It was a great place to live, and the rent was good. But somebody bought the house, and under the guise of saying they were going to fix it all up, really what they did was they got everybody out of the house that lived there because we didn't have leases, and they just hacked up the house and, you know, and jacked up the rents. That's what they were really doing. So I didn't have a place to stay, and I was at home for a couple of days. All my stuff was in my mom's garage, and I was working at the vet. And then it just didn't occur to me. I mean, it's right in front of me, but it just didn't occur to me. And
but,
so...
But so you move in, and I love the actually I think it was the reporter for the Inquirer, you know, basically said you're the Phantom of the Opera, of except it's not the opera, it's the vet. You're living there, and because of the fact that your uncles you know ran the concessions and ran some concessions in the parking lot, and you had keys, so you were, your idea was be seen around a lot so that it just always seemed to be, oh yeah, he has a reason to be here, correct?
Yeah, it's the idea of hiding in plain sight. It was so obvious. And it was so absurd that people just, as people today are going, this can't be real. Back then, it was like, this can't be real. So people just said, nah, it cannot be. And so I didn't get the kind of scrutiny you might have gotten otherwise, but it was just too absurd.
Okay, well, Tom, let me ask you this. If you're seen going in and out all the time, eventually somebody's going to put two and two together. Did you time things out to where it would be, where you could, you know, right under the radar a little bit, or were you just coming and going as you pleased?
Coming and going as I pleased. I had my own door. It was an obscure door. It was over by gate D, under gate D on the ground level,
right.
and I could come and go as I pleased. I would sometimes come in and out of security, just kind of just to, you know, give the dog a bone, you know, give the security dog dog bones and pet its head and say hi to the guys, or, you know, come by with a pizza, something like that. But yeah, I had my own door and nobody knew I was coming and going.
So a description from one of your buddies who actually saw the setup said that you had a bed, a sink, a fridge, well stocked with beer, a stereo, coffee maker, hot plate, seating for guests, and your carpet was some leftover AstroTurf.
No, it was new AstroTurf.
New AstroTurf.
It was new. It was beautiful. I mean, they had redone the vet, that year, that summer, I think. And it was brand new. They had rolls of it downstairs. I could get all I wanted. It was beautiful.
That's great.
Who all knew? How many people knew what was going on?
I'll bet there were at least 500 people knew about this. or more. Or probably more. But they'll come out of the woodwork.
Anybody up the tree as far as seniority goes that knew and just let it go?
I don't know what kind of tree you want, but like Jerry Sizemore knew about. Sizemore, Bradley, ball players. Yeah.
Okay, but management wasn't aware of.
Management wasn't aware.
Okay.
And there were some city workers that knew it and could kind of wink and all, but they knew I was benign. I mean, you know, I wasn't, you know, and we were friends, so yeah, they weren't going to rat me out.
I also think, honestly, Tom, that it's a product of the time, because obviously with the hyper security and all the stuff we're going through now, I don't think people just go, let that be. But you had, so, you know, encounters with Tug McGraw and Dick Vermeil and Julius Erving and all these people. And apparently the word is there would be occasional halftime parties in your apartment.
Out of hand. Yeah, that got out of hand quickly, because friends would bring friends and you know, they bring their girlfriends. And then I realized it was getting outside of my
control.
It was getting too big. So I shut that down.
Wow. Did you ever have to, I mean, did it become difficult to try and kick people out of your quote unquote home if they were getting out of hand?
No.
Okay.
he had the military training, right?
Yeah. I wasn't sure because they could just turn around and say, "Really? You're trying to kick me out? I'll have you kicked out."
Right.
You
know? Right.
There's ways of doing things.
Okay, I gotcha. Who was? Tell us about some of these celebrity encounters and how those went.
Well, I mean, some of the ball players. The Eagles were mostly my friends were mostly on the Eagles. I knew a couple of Phillies, but not just to see, you know. And then I knew Tug later on as a drinking buddy. But Sizemore, Bradley, Ozzie, you know, Keith Krepley. Their wives would come by after the games because it was convenient. Their option was to go out in the parking lot and wait for their husbands to come out after an hour, you know, in the locker room. So they could come up there and sit there. We could put some music on, and they could have a cup of tea or coffee or something like that, or
so you, drink if you, they wanted. You're having all these hot, you know, sports wives coming down and hanging with you. You know, that's pretty wild. But now you had to have encountered over the course of your time there some MMR DJs. Do you know anybody from this station who was there hanging out or that you encountered?
No.
Yeah.
I knew Anita back at that time because she was dating one of the Eagles, but no.
Okay. All right.
Tell us about, you know, what you would do in the evening when no one was around. Would you kind of have the run of the place from time to time? Did you mind venturing out and about?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. The greatest thing, you'll appreciate, anybody who was ever at the vet will understand, up on the 600, I used to rollerblade all around the building, and roller skate, rather.
Yeah.
I had Terry Totolo, a Samoan linebacker, loaned me his, he's from Long Beach. He loaned me a world-class pair of roller skates. Mm-hmm. And we had the same size foot. So during the season, I had those. And I would roller skate the 600 and 700 level.
Wow.
You could actually, back there in the late 70s, you could roller skate. And it was a hassle. If you at the top of the 700 level, you could go all the way around the vet.
Okay.
It was flat up there.
Right.
And you could roller skate. Later, they built stuff up there, like, you know, super boxes and stuff like that. But back then, you could roller skate around there. And to roller skate the 600 level of the vet, it's about a half-mile loop. And to see the city of Philadelphia in a 360-degree panorama from the height of a roughly a 10-story building. So you're looking all across the buildings of South Philly, the bridges, the, you know, the airports, refineries, University City. It was great. God, I missed that.
Sure. Did you did you ever encounter any trespassers late in the evening?
Just Dick Vermeil. We scared each other to death. I came down the ramp. And I was really on a roar that night. And I came around into the lower levels of the vet and headed for the elevator. And as I'm approaching it, and I didn't think anybody was in the building but security over by Gate B, by the Phillies entrance. Suddenly the door started open, and they couldn't be operating on their own. And in the last nanosecond, it was like, what? And then the door opened, and I went in there too fast. And Vermeil was in there. He was probably coming down from his office. Had to be in football season. He was probably going down to the locker room to switch over some films he was looking at. And he was standing there with a whole stack of film canisters. And it was so rude of me, but I flew into the elevator, hit the back door, and I was hurt. I hit it so hard, the back wall of the elevator. Film cans went everywhere.
Oh, my God.
I think we both screamed. And then for some reason, the door closed again. And we started back up together. And we're looking at each other like, you know, and we're stunned. And we got to the fourth floor, the doors open up, and I think I might have said something like, sorry, coach, or goodnight, coach, and skated out.
And that was it.
You collided with him on skates.
Huh?
You collided with him on skates.
I didn't hit him. I hit the back wall.
Hit the wall.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, hit the back wall, and my feet came out from under me, and I grabbed the bar there and, like, was hanging on to that. And I remember being in a lot of pain at that moment, and he was in his own level of pain because of this idiot on skates, you know. And the door closed, and we had to ride together up, you know, and we're just looking at each other like two guys who are ready to, you know, it's like catching a snake or something like that. I mean, it was
surreal.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's
it was surreal.
And then, you know, just sorry, coach. And then you leave.
and I would see him around the building once in a while, and I'd see him looking at me like, was that the guy? Or, you know, because, you know, I don't think you could. I don't know. It was nuts.
If you're just tuning in, it's Tom Garvey we're speaking to, the Secret Department Vet Stadium, a surreal memoir, which is available now. And he lived in the vet for 3 years. So, Tom, arguably one of the most exciting time periods in this city's history was 1980, the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
So you're in the middle of all that. What was that like?
It was great. I could sneak my friends in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was very popular with J.C. Dobbs back then.
So how would you do this? You'd just use the same methodology that, like, it's clear I'm supposed to be here, and then just get them through that same door that led into your apartment?
Yeah, once they got inside the stadium, they could wander around. Most of my friends usually after, once the game started, my duties in the lot were wrapped up. I would go up by right above first base at the top of the 300 level. That's where they used to stand, and you know they'd gather up there, and you'd go up there and it'd be like you know a dozen guys standing around with beers watching the game, and I'd just join them.
Wow. And you mentioned, you know, wrapping up with your duty in lots. What was the outrageous parking price back in the day?
Huh. It was all of $2. It was a dollar when I started, and then it went up to $2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
Like $30 to go park, man.
Hey, people went nuts.
When they raised it?
$2.
Yeah.
It went crazy.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's amazing. So let me ask you, I asked in the introduction, has anyone approached you for movie rights to this?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's
interest, as they say.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Did it get really cold, in the winter months?
No. I had heaters in there. I had like an artificial fireplace, which didn't put out any heat. Yeah. It didn't put out heat, but I had some space heaters and there were pipes in there that had to be on all year round, you know, for different reasons. So there was there might have been some heat from them. I don't know if there was. I just know it wasn't cold.
Wow.
And in the summer, it wasn't air conditioned, but because of where it was under the 300 level seats, I mean, so it didn't get really hot.
I'm guessing this is a no, Tom, but are there any photos of this space that exists?
No, I was death on that. I knew that photos could, you know, photos were proof, and people might tell a story about it, you know, if they were there and they saw it, but it might not get legs, but a photo would.
Yeah, right. No, and so that's, you figure that figured prominently into you not being discovered for the years you were there.
I was fortunate. I was lucky. I hid in plain sight. I mean, I was ubiquitous. Something I'm keying on just lately is when I talk to people about this, the people that can't believe it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have believed it. But the people that can't, back when it was happening, people couldn't believe it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it hasn't changed.
They just kind of write it off. Like, nah, you just can't. No, it's impossible.
All right. So why did you decide to move out?
I didn't have any choice. There was a contract for the parking, and that expired. It went up to competitive bid. And the company I worked for, they were outbid, underbid by someone else. And we couldn't even believe that somebody would want to do it for that price. And so they lost their contract at the end of 1981. The contract was a 10-year, 1971 to 81.
Tom, where did life take you after that? Where'd you start working and where'd you move to and all the rest?
I didn't work. I was kidnapped. I was taken. This is going to sound strange, but it's semi
really.
True.
Yeah,
it's true. Billy Bradley came back to town to pick up some furniture he had stored, and we were drinking down at Walt's Crabs on 2 Street, and Mike Studzinski was with us, and we're sitting there at the bar, and Billy says, "You ought to come back to Texas with me tomorrow, and I'm going down in the morning." I said, "I can't." I was giving him all kinds of lame excuses, and finally he said, "Enough." He said, "I'll be outside your house at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. When I beep the horn, if you don't come out in the truck, I'm coming and I'm going to drag you out. You're going to Texas." So I said, "You're going to kidnap me and take me to Texas?" He goes, "Yeah." He says, "You'll have the time of your life." And I did. And I came back. That was the 16th of February, 1982.
Uh-huh.
And I came back just before Christmas to see my family.
And then did you move back?
Yeah, I moved back. I stayed back. A lot of things happened that year, and I didn't know it, but I was on track to meet the girl of my dreams that summer, and my whole life changed for the better.
Yeah,
I mean, anybody that likes me or cares about me was happy with what happened next because she's been a godsend.
What does she think about your time in the vet?
I think she thinks back like what a chance she must have taken on me that she didn't know what she was dealing with.
She what she was getting into.
I mean, you've lived like 4 or 5 different lives all in one life. It's pretty amazing.
Well, this one right now is pretty cool. I'll tell you that. This is fun.
All right. Great. Well, yeah,
all this stuff. And thanks for having me on.
Are you kidding me?
Pleasure.
Listen, what kind of interest has been put on you about this? Because, I mean, this is one of those little stories that'll expand outside of Philadelphia. Even if people, you know, just hearing it, somebody lived in a stadium for three years.
This is going viral. I mean, yeah. I think that's the term. It's going viral. And it's, you know, like I called an Army buddy out in Sacramento the other day, and he was saying he was driving home from the gym, and he heard me on NPR or something like that.
On NPR.
I heard you were a trivia question for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me over the weekend.
That's what he heard.
Yeah, so they ask they'll ask a question, and then the answer will be Tom Garvey, Preston Elliott, Steve Morrison, and you have to guess who the right answer is. And Tom Garvey was the right answer.
Yeah.
All right. So, a quick question: you live there, but of all the stadiums that have been in this area and that currently are, which one holds the most? Which one do you obviously have a connection to the vet, but which one do you think is the best?
They're all good. The multi-sport stadium was a great idea when we thought about it back in the 60s, but it wasn't good for either sport.
Yeah.
It was convenient, but it didn't lend itself. So when they built Camden Yards and things like that, then you started seeing these 35,000 stadiums where you could really be, you know, in the game.
Yeah.
It took off. So there are some, you know, the Link and you know, all that. They're great stadiums.
Great.
But they're not circular stadiums where you can skate all the way around.
Right.
Yeah.
You get that 3/4 mile loop.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, that was glorious.
Wow. Wow. Tom, it's a hell of a story, man. I'm glad I'm glad that people believe you.
Yeah.
And that fortunately you have people that can back you up on this. And I really, like Steve was saying, I want to see this be a movie. I could see this being kind of a comedy, feel good thing. But I think you got a movie on your hands in this story, Tom.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stories in the book, and I can never pick my favorite one. But a lot of things happened. And when I was putting this together last spring and summer, like, I was amazed at the things I was thinking about. And as I kept putting them down, I mean, I left stuff out. I mean, I would never have finished it if I, you know, kept.
Well, that's the second book, or the extra features on the Blu-ray of the movie. So there you go.
No, the next one, it's going to be a trilogy. The next one is also a surreal memoir, and it's going to be The Long Ago Girl, and that's about something unbelievable that did happen to me when I came back and met the girl of my dreams.
All right.
You want to tease us with what that story might be, or are you holding on to that?
No, I'm
going
to hold on to it.
Okay. All right, I got you. It's all good, Tom. Well, listen, congratulations on the success and going viral, sir. And I love this story. So it was nice to meet you, Tom.
Guys, thank you. I'm very grateful. Thanks.
Anytime.
I really appreciate it.
You
be
bet.
Well.
Tom Garvey, guys.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
That's
the
great.
Secret Apartment, Vet Stadium, A Surreal Memoir. And that is on sale now.
You can clearly tell the highlight of these decades. I mean, besides finding the perfect woman, roller skating around.
Yeah, he loved it.
Yeah.
Dude.
Okay, yeah.
So I went roller skating yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I injured myself.
Oh, oh man. No.
I didn't fall. I don't fall. No, I have fallen before. I fell in front of
Casey. No, there's no video proof of that, Preston.
But I think, so my knee is killing me today, and I didn't realize it. I woke up, I'm like, man, why the hell is my knee hurt so bad? And I was limping around, and I'm like, oh, you dumbass, you went skating yesterday. And I think I was boogieing too hard.
Oh, really?
Oh, I was boogieing too hard because I like to shuffle skate.
Ooh.
And so I was doing a little bit of that and was really enjoying myself. But actually, I went both ice skating and roller skating this weekend.
What?
Which was cool. Caroline and I did both.
Where'd you go ice skating?
We went to Hatfield Ice, and then we went to Inline 309 to go roller skating.
I wonder, so I can't ice skate anymore. It hurts my feet. I got bum feet. But I wonder if my feet would be okay in a pair of roller skates. Because I liked roller skating.
They might be.
Roller skates never bothered me. Ice skates always bothered me, but they just bother me more now.
You have pernicious foot issues.
Yeah.
So,
plantar fasciitis, right?
But they're definitely more comfortable than ice skates, I think.
And they're resting on, you know, quads, right? So, you know, with ice skates, you know, I don't know what it is about ice skates, but they just bother me so bad. But
you need something a little bit more comfortable?
Yeah, there's nowhere in Delco to skate anymore now that the CNN Skate Palace is closed.
There's no skating rinks in Delco?
Wait, no.
Is that ice or roller?
Roller. No.
Really?
Yeah, because we have a few different ice rinks in Delco. So you got Springfield, the Skadium, and then the Ice Works in Aston.
Yeah.
But
what about outdoors for roller skating?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, there's a rollerblading, a roller hockey rink near my house.
Skate park's going to allow for it, too. I started last year a little bit. Yeah. And
roller skates or
roller
blades?
Skating.
Yeah.
And I'm not very good at it. My girlfriend is very good at it, but it's fun. But I found, Preston, maybe you would agree, like the weight, how you put your weight on your feet when you're roller skating is different than when you're ice skating.
Yeah.
And it's less, I think it's less stressful on your feet.
Anything you can do that can set in motion a pernicious injury that follows you all the days of your life is well worth it.
Sure, you know, it's great. So you hurt yourself just randomly roller skating yesterday. But like, Steve, you know, when you go bowling and you've bowled like three games,
oh
and
my God.
You wake up the next day and your quad on your planting foot hurts.
It's like, what the F?
I know.
And I had the last time I did it, I had all the stuff, the brace, the thing. Ah, look at me. Yeah. I'm like, I was like Quasimodo by lunch next day.
And you work out like every single
every day,
right? But you're just not, unfortunately.
That's not the way I use my.
You're doing the motions that you're not normally doing. And you can.
You put pads on when you roller skate and stuff?
Oh, no.
Oh, really?
What kind of pads do you use during that time of the month?
Double maxi, triple.
Double maxi.
I don't care. Yeah. I will put a helmet on.
Hell yeah.
I don't care.
I fall incessantly, so I feel like I have to.
No, I'm pretty confident. I've been skating since I was a kid, and I'm you know, not sitting here, you know, bragging, but I'm good at it.
Gary Busey doesn't use a helmet.
Yeah.
Get a whole lot more Preston and Steve at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.